Good evening. This is the meeting of the PNB Elections Committee. It's September 8th, 2008, and I'm the Chair Pro Tem, Bob Lederer, and our Secretary, Yoshi Yamanaka, will now call the roll, please.
Secretary Pro Tem, Wesley Bethune, Carolyn Burden.
Here.
Steve Brown. Tico Chasin. Bill Crozier.
Here.
Kathy Davis. Anthony Fest.
Here.
Jan Goodman. Bob Lederer.
Here.
Ithia Wangaza.
Here.
Sorry, Ithia. Leslie Radford.
Here.
George Ryder. Rob Robinson. Bonnie Simmons.
Here.
Yoshi Yamanaka is here, and that makes 8 out of 15, so we do have quorum.
Okay, thank you. All right, so I sent out a proposed agenda, and in case anyone doesn't have it, and also for those who may be listening, I'll read it, and then we can discuss it. Number one, approval of agenda, 5 minutes. Two is election of chair and secretary if the WPFW election of its LSB members has occurred. 10 minutes. Three, setting of the October meeting date, 5 minutes. Four, review and approval of the July 21st meeting minutes if they're available, 5 minutes. Five, report from the four working groups that we have. The first one is looking at whether to hire outside organizations to run part or all of the elections. That's 15 minutes. Second, the one on cutting election costs, which is 20 minutes. Third is cleaning up listener membership lists. That's 5 minutes. And fourth is staff lists, which I had put 5 minutes because I thought it was a brief report, but I noticed that Carolyn Burden just emailed asking for 15 minutes, so I can amend my proposal to say 15 minutes for that. Number six would be proposed bylaws amendment regarding the national election supervisor and the local election supervisor, 15 minutes. Seven, proposed bylaws amendment regarding the election of affiliate directors, 10 minutes. And then these two leftover items that we've had for several months, motion by Rob Robinson referred by the PNB for a task force on elections, 20 minutes, and motion regarding campaign finance reform, 20 minutes, and then new business, if any, with an adjournment time of 10:30. So the floor is open for amendments or other discussion.
That sounds fine with me.
Okay, well hearing none. Yeah, yeah.
A question. So
yes.
did the chair actually change 5D to staff list 15 minutes?
Yes.
Yes. Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Hearing no discussion, then let me ask, is there any objection to adopting this? Okay. Hearing none, it's adopted. Okay. So the first item is election of chair and secretary, but the progress report, unfortunately, is that we still don't know what's happening at WPFW. I did put in a call to the PNB director who's on this committee, Rob Robinson, and I haven't heard back from him yet as to whether that election has occurred. So by our prior agreement, we continue with the pro tem officers until that election, until we have confirmation that that election has occurred. So we'll just have to, you know, keep monitoring that. Okay, next is setting the October meeting date. So we've been meeting on Mondays in general. Is there anyone who has a problem? I mean, obviously people have commitments on particular Mondays, but in general, is there anyone who objects to continuing to look at Mondays? Okay, so hearing none, then let's look at the different Mondays in October, and I'll pull up on screen the KP. TFX calendar. One second here. Okay. All right. Oh, well, every Monday in October is open. So tonight is the 8th. Do we want to shoot for October 6th or 13th? Well, 13th, for what, whether it matters to anyone, is Columbus Day, a.k.a. Indigenous Peoples Day. Does anyone have a preference between those two?
This is Anthony. I'd suggest we go with the earlier one.
Okay. Any other opinions?
It's Bonnie. I'm fine with it, but I won't be available on the 6th.
Okay. Would you be available on the 13th?
Probably.
Uh-huh. All right. So there's two options there. Does anyone else have an opinion which we should go with?
No, it sounds good.
Okay. So then the 13th? Any objection to the 13th? Okay. Well, hearing no objection, then I guess our next meeting is Monday, October 13th at 8:30 Eastern. Okay.
Okay.
All right. Next item, review and approval of July 21st minutes. Yosh, I know you put out a draft, which was very detailed. Thank you so much for that. Were you able to... I guess you weren't able to finalize it yet.
No, I've not had time to go back over the tape and polish it up, so I do apologize for that.
No problem.
Before we move on,
yes.
I know that we've set the October meeting date. Are we going to try to set one for November as well?
Well, if people would prefer, we could.
I think it's been our standard practice to try to set them 2 months, you know, the month in advance and 2 months in advance, so we can kind of...
Oh, you're right. Yeah. Okay. Well, sure. So, again, let's look at Mondays. Let me see if there's anything on.
The 3rd is the night before Election Day, so I think we can see
that. That's a very good point. Very good point. Okay. So what about Monday the 10th?
That's the day before Veterans Day, and which will probably be a big demonstration day. But other than that, I don't see anything on the calendar.
Does anyone have a problem with the 10th? Okay, so hearing no objection, then that'll be our November date, Monday the 10th.
Okay,
thanks, Yosh.
Sure.
Okay, so now we go on to the working groups. First one is the group, and I thought it was worth reviewing the actual wording that we've been using, which it's sort of been referred to as the RFP, the Request for Proposal Group, to write a document to solicit a company that would do the elections, which, you know, is definitely part of the purview, but the original purview was a little broader. It was whether to hire outside organizations, nonprofit or for-profit, to run all or part of the elections, which my understanding was that also included the question of an organization like the California Mediation and Conciliation Service or other entities. But having said that, let me turn it over to who from that group is going to give the report. Would that be you, Yosh?
Or no, that would be Anthony, I believe.
Anthony?
Yeah, but to my mortification, I missed the last meeting.
Oh, that's true.
So somehow unaware it was happening.
So Yosh, you want to go ahead then and give the report?
Yes, I guess I could try to report. Basically, we didn't get much accomplished because we had not moved the ball very much forward since the previous meeting. One thing that did happen between the previous meeting and the one prior to that was that Art Stasny had circulated some very insightful comments and critiques of both the draft RFP that I had proposed as well as the draft RFP that Jack Van Aken had set forth. So since none of us had incorporated Art Stasny's comment, we didn't have a whole lot to talk about. And so all we did was, I think, we discussed three possible dates for our next meeting, and then we adjourned. And in the meantime, since that last meeting, I have I did have some time this afternoon to work on Art's suggestions, and I circulated that around 4:30 Pacific time, which would be 7:30 Eastern time. And I know at least Bob has had a chance to look at it, but probably most others have not either looked at it or certainly have not had time to digest it. But that's as far as our working group has gotten. We, you know, I guess individually I was able to incorporate Art's critique, but they really have not been vetted by the working group.
Can somebody who has a conversation in the background please put their phone on mute? Okay, so... well, let me ask, has anyone had time to read or even skim Yosha's draft that he posted an hour ago?
I skimmed over it. It looks pretty good to me.
Okay. Still. Anyone else?
I had a question, though.
Yeah. Sure, go ahead.
Well, I'm still wondering if we might need both an NES, a person, and then they in turn could subcontract to an organization if they choose to do a lot of the other work, like ballot counting and sending them out and all that type of thing. It seems like a lot of the work is still involved with dealing with problems with each LES and that sort of thing. And I'm just a little leery of contracting everything out and then leave us open to... you know, maybe arbitrary decisions or high costs from, you know, if it's sort of like a cost plus contract, if they want a extra money for dealing with every election complaint, that sort of thing.
Point well taken.
Yeah, that's a difficult philosophical type question. I think philosophical or political or maybe.
Pardon me.
Sociological question, and I don't know that we can answer that. I guess we could bat it around, but it might take us a half an hour or an hour in this committee, and I don't know that we would come up with a conclusion. I guess that's up to our chair as to how he wishes to handle that question.
Well, I mean, we've allocated 15 minutes, so I think that's a fundamental enough question that maybe the committee should try to grapple with it for a few minutes.
Mm.
Well, maybe before we do that, Yosh, could you, for those, because very few people have had time to read your draft, could you just summarize kind of the high points of what are the most central requirements that this RFP is asking a company to fulfill?
Well, I guess it boils down to a single transferable vote or with the... with the wrinkle added that at least up to this...
Steve Brown.
Hi, Steve.
Good, Steve.
Hi. Sorry to be late. Stuck at the Pacific Coast Highway.
Okay. Go ahead, Yosh.
That at least to this point, we've allowed multiple preferences. In other words, if you're asked to vote for your first preference, some people might... put two, three, or four people in as their first preference, and maybe two, three, or four people in as their second preference. And that's the wrinkle. So whatever software that the vendor is going to use, that their software is going to have to accommodate that wrinkle. Also, there's got to be some way of interfacing or merging the two databases. One database will be the scanned paper ballot, and the other one will be the online balloting. And somehow the vendor is going to have to devise some sort of a program which will allow the merger of those two databases. And that, according to Art Stasny, is going to be a major stumbling block or at least a major concern, and so we should make sure that the vendor is going to either produce that, show that to us somewhere up front, or give us a date certain to say by December 1st our company will provide you with a working with software which will merge both the paper ballots and the online balloting. And so I think that's a valid concern. I would say that that's probably the two major additions. The other additions that I've inserted in here from Art's comments are primarily technical or just kind of fleshing out in greater detail what might be entailed at the vendor.
Can I ask a question, Steve Brown?
Yeah.
Yeah, I just hope I didn't miss this by coming late, but I'm curious. I know that it would be a great saving if we didn't have to send out paper ballots at all. I could do it online, but that's not possible because not everybody is online. So I assume that the online balloting would only be for returning ballots, in other words, for voting. And in that case, how much could we be expected to save in both money and in time? It doesn't seem like a lot or enough to make it worthwhile.
Well, I think Bonnie is of the same opinion. Well, this is Bonnie's contention. Bonnie, do you want to address part of that?
I'm sorry, Yosh. Catch me up there again. I'm sorry.
Yes, the question was how much do we expect to save by online balloting?
Fully the return part
of it. Well, I don't think that it's possible for us to online ballot this year. What I am suggesting is that the rather heavy, many-paged campaign statements booklet go online. We're still going to have to mail ballots, at least for this year, because I don't believe that a lot of the people during Fund Drive give out their emails. And we don't generally encourage all that much of getting people's email addresses, at least at this point. You know how all of us are kind of fed up with getting on email lists and then getting pelted with emails. I mean, when we do our newsletter at KPFA, we make people specifically register to get it so that we are not making them feel like we're just casually using their email addresses for things. But I don't see any reason why the campaign literature, the statements from everybody, can't go online and go out to people. Everybody that we've got an email for, we can post them on our websites. We can also make some paper copies that we could certainly make available to those people that were really concerned about not being able to in some way go online and read them. And I would doubt that we'd have a very big problem with that. I think that it is a considerable savings because if we're going to send things first class, it's going to be the difference between 42 cents and whatever it would be to send all of the literature as we did this year. I thought it was close to a dollar on each.
Bonnie, my own report spoke against mailing first class because there would be no advantage to us over standard class. I mean, I went over that quite thoroughly. I investigated that. But even so, how do those people who are not online let us know that they want paper statements, if we can't reach them online, to tell them that this is available? Broadcasting
Bill,
on the radio, you know, is not enough.
Bill,
why?
Put me on the stack.
Okay, Bill, go ahead.
Well, one of the suggestions I had was to send everyone an envelope, you know, 42 cents, 1 ounce, that would have instructions, a paper ballot, and information on how to get the candidate information online, and then also a return postcard that they could use if they can't access the information online or for whatever reason really want a printed copy. And then they would just mail that back to the LES, I guess, or whoever's sending out all the information. And then hopefully that would be only a few. And the nice thing about that, too, is you could do a follow-up mailing for people who haven't voted, say, a week before the election, and only mail, you know, again, well, I guess it would be less than 42 cents, as Steve said, a single mailing with a reminder to people who haven't returned their ballots, too.
You want to do an extra mailing?
Well, if necessary, you know, in order to reach quorum. If a week before the election, I'm not saying, this way you wouldn't have to be mailing all the candidate packets, all the candidate information. You just send another envelope with a reminder, you know, please vote, and if you can't find your ballot, here's how to get it. And make it simple for them, and you know, don't just rely on on-air reminders. But that's the second thing. The main point was to have a postcard in the first mailing that they could mail back if they don't have online access to request the printed information.
Well, this is Bob. I just wanted to express a lot of concern about that arrangement. I certainly understand the idea behind it. It seems to make sense, but we've had such bad experience with follow-up on, in the past it's been the question of replacement ballots, but to leave to that kind of a process the ability to get a hard copy of a candidate booklet, I think is very precarious and would tend to then bias the election more towards the people who have online access. And given especially the unfortunate fact that at most of our stations, the median age of our members is around, or at least of our listeners, which I think parallels our members, is around 54. That would suggest that there's a fair chunk of members who are not online. So there could be quite a few requests that come in to send out the packets, and there is only a limited time to cast the vote, so if something gets delayed, you don't get the packet in the mail on time, you have to call, say, hey, I didn't get it, what's going on, and then the time slips away and you've lost your right to vote. And I think that's a very precarious thing to do to someone's, someone's very basic right. So I am concerned by that.
Steve Brown?
This is Leslie also.
Okay, Steve and then Leslie.
Yeah, I agree with Bob, but I would like to further say that the cost, if we're doing this to save money, the cost of the mailing is somewhere between $10,000 and $16,000 per station. Equal or greater cost is administration of the election, hiring all these people, supervisors and consultants, which won't be impacted by the savings. At a cost of only $10,000 to $16,000 or $17,000 per mailing, we can easily raise that amount in the mailing itself. We can get enough people to provide a donation to offset the cost of the mailing when they return their ballot to pay for it. I think that we could either make money or wipe out the cost of the mailing itself. And I think we should not consider the cost of a mailing as being prohibitive, since we can eliminate it. I would like to see some concentration done on eliminating or reducing the cost of election supervision. I think the process is cumbersome and entails too many people at too high a price, and we haven't really investigated that at all.
Okay, Leslie.
Yeah, I'm feeling kind of like Bob is about these online ballots, perhaps from another angle. And that is that voters tend to be lazy, and name recognition is going to count for a lot more if they don't have the folder of candidates in front of them. If they're going to have to go online, look it up. We're going to have people who just vote for names they recognize. And as far as cost reduction goes, I agree it's a huge issue, and I haven't looked at the breakdown of the prices of all of the facets of this. But there's also huge inefficiencies going on here, and I wonder how much that's contributing to the cost. I guess I'm asking if anybody knows how much the...
I'm sorry. Can you repeat that? I didn't hear that last thing. There were what going on?
Huge inefficiencies in this process.
Uh-huh.
With duplicate mailings, with emergency mailings. And I don't know what the cost of that is as a breakout item, but if we turn this over to a vendor at a flat fee, then perhaps we're out from under some of those.
Well, maybe that brings us back to, was it Bill who had the kind of philosophical question about cost plus and whether we're at the mercy of a contractor? Was that you, Bill?
Well, yeah, the idea was maybe separating out some of the NES duties, the things that involve more mechanical things, that, you know, sending out ballots and packet information and doing the vote counting. I agree, contracting that sounds like a good idea, but handling challenges or all the other kind of complaints and stuff, I'm not sure we want to contract that out to somebody, you know, a company that's going to be doing the ballot processing.
And
I'm
can
not
you
sure
say,
they want to do it.
Can you say more about why you think that combination wouldn't work?
Well, it's hard to define how much that's going to involve, and, you know, a company might not, if they want to charge us so much per complaint, then we're leaving ourselves open-ended to however much it might cost. If they're willing to do it for a fixed cost, then what happens if there's a lot more complaints than they expect? Will they not handle them adequately or give them enough time? Or I don't know. I'm just a little concerned about that. And of course, if we can do this thing right and make sure everybody gets a ballot and get it done promptly and get replacement ballots sent out, we shouldn't have many complaints though. So maybe I shouldn't be worrying about that. But that's been a real problem here in the past.
Well, if I can call myself, I think that we should go for a very clearly stated RFP that warns them in advance that, you know, in the past we could go back to the records and find the average. You know, in the past there have been, you know, 35 complaints per station on average. Your job, your company would have to process all of these complaints, issue an opinion, and communicate it to all the parties, blah, blah, blah. So they would know going in that that's part of the contract. And if they're not prepared to do that at a fixed price, then they should pass up the contract. Or if they want to come back on their own initiative and say, well, we'll only do that on a per complaint, you know, X number of dollars per complaint, well, then maybe we could negotiate that. But I don't think we should assume, I mean, this is just my tentative opinion, that we shouldn't assume from the beginning that these are inherently incompatible functions and that we should have separate people, because I think that actually will inflate the cost. If we start having a company to do part of it and then an individual contractor person to do other parts of it, then I think it's really going to get expensive, and not to mention the coordination problems will multiply. But other people on this, who would like to speak?
This is Anthony. I would.
Go ahead.
My concern, and I've probably said this quite a few times before, but this, you know, basically goes along with what Bill is saying. My concern, actually it supplements what Bill is saying, some of these companies may not have the competence in that area. It may not be part of their offering. You know, I've used the expression, you know, paper processing to cover, you know, printing, mailing, collecting, returning. I mean, mechanical tasks. And then, granted, you can do them well or you can do them poorly, but they are mechanical tasks. Whereas these other things are issues of interpreting rules and poring over records and things, so I think they're conceptually very different, and it may well be that these firms that do this won't have the people with the expertise or the judgment to take on that kind of task, or if they do take it on, they may not do it well.
Bonnie?
Go ahead, Bonnie.
Looking at our past performance by election supervisors, I'm not sure we should be so quick to think that a company wouldn't be able to do this at least as well. And I think that, you know, I don't think that we're completely outside of the norm in what we're looking for. I agree that our elections are pretty maze-like and tangled, but I think that if we go to people who are used to dealing with this, we'll get some answers from them. Some of them may come back and say they don't deal with those aspects of it at all. Others may have really good ideas on how to deal with it. Some of them may be completely unfazed and willing to take it on, and I don't think you're going to know the answer until we put something out there to see what their response is. We're sort of trying to guess what the response will be before we've gone out and asked.
Anyone else? Well, I just had an idea based on this conversation. What if we simply break the RFP up into a two-part RFP? So that one is the more, as Anthony put it, the more mechanical tasks, because there may be some companies or entities that, you know, that's really their expertise and nothing more. And the other would be the complaint processing and all the decision-making aspects of the you know, being an NES and an LES. And that companies could apply for both if they wanted, and there'd be separate fees for each, or they could just apply for one or the other and leave it to their option and see what happens. What do people think of that idea?
That sounds reasonable. Steve Brown may just add...
Go ahead, Steve.
...that there are companies that specialize in conducting elections for unions. And,
right.
I think that they would be quite capable of taking on the challenge of Pacifica, which is certainly no more crazy than some union elections. The other thing is, why would we not consider at this time? I know when we started with elections, there was a lot of paranoia about thievery and stealing and right-wing groups coming in and taking over the entire network. I hope some of that has abated, and we might want to put on the table the idea of actually conducting this election by ourselves. It is very, very easy, basically, to put out a mailing, and that's all the ballot is. It's not hard. And it is also easy to supervise the mailing if we can agree on some people in Pacifica that we feel we can trust to do that. And that's really a matter of a lot of people deciding to how can I say it, to either bury the hatchet or trust each other for an election or something. And we could save a couple of $100,000, which is what it costs us in hiring all these companies and supervisors to take care of the elections. I think it could be handled in-house at a very small fee, and it's worth at least looking into, because the upside in savings is so great. It may not be possible, but maybe we shouldn't dismiss it out of hand since the cost factor is so great.
Well, that's this is Yosh, if I can
jump in. Yeah, go ahead.
That sounds interesting. I'd like to see it fleshed out a little bit more. I don't see it just sounds so simple a solution to save, you know, upwards of $100,000. So, Steve, if you could just, you know, flesh that out either, you know,
okay,
not necessarily here right now, because I think...
Right, no, I understand. I've already fleshed out the costs, the physical costs of the mailings themselves. It's not a real problem, and not a very high cost. As I said earlier on, the big cost is in all the people in supervision and companies. And I'll look into it and see what it would take, what I think it might take if we brought it in house. And I'm sure there'll be other comments on what that might entail.
Mm. Well, Bill, this is go ahead.
Yes, I'm concerned that if we have anybody in-house do it, whoever loses is likely to challenge, because they'll say the vote was being manipulated one way or the other.
It's always possible.
I think it opens us up to more possible lawsuits. I mean, I hope not. If Steve has a good point, if we can convince everybody we're doing it fairly and trying real hard, but I don't know if we can convince everybody of that.
We can have indemnificatory provisions, in other words, where it's like arbitration, where everybody agrees, okay, whatever the result, we're in it, and this is the process we will adopt. If there are any complaints, we're not going to go to court. We'll use this method to arbitrate any disputes. We'd have to work that out beforehand, of course, and that's a good point. But whatever process we use for the elections, we're always open to lawsuits. As you see, we're in court at WBAI and possibly elsewhere in the network I don't know about over that last election. So nothing will save us from a lawsuit if somebody wants to bring one. We can only set up a procedure for arbitration that keeps it out of the courts, which is expensive and doesn't satisfy anybody.
Yosh for the stack.
Yeah, go ahead, Yosh.
In response to Steve, Foundation Council has previously opined that arbitration is not the great money saver when it comes down to litigation. Oftentimes arbitration can be quite costly and can approach the cost of litigation itself in the court system.
I didn't mean formal arbitration. I understand that, and I agree with him on that.
Right. The other thing is that it seems to me that if you're going to force the voter to go to arbitration, that seems to be infringing on an inherent right. Because, inherently, in New York, voters have been suing and suing and suing. And to say, well, guess what? That was yesterday, but today you can no longer sue. You must go to arbitration. That seems to require at least a bylaws amendment.
Yeah, it's hard.
Okay, hold on, Steve. Steve, this is becoming a back and forth. Okay,
sorry.
So I would just point that out. It seems to my mind that it would require a bylaws amendment, which would of course require a vote of the membership. My opinion.
Okay, and let me just throw in here that not only would that require a bylaws amendment, but the whole concept of taking the election, quote-unquote, in-house is a fundamental change and a major bylaws amendment that tampers with the whole notion, for good or for ill, but I think it made sense, that in order to guarantee that elections, or at least have a shot at having fairness, that we can't rely on any staff of Pacifica to run the election because, there's all sorts of possibility that they might want to, do things that would help people that they want to see elected. But the other factor is it's totally unrealistic. I mean, even if we weren't about to have layoffs at several stations, the staff is totally overworked. It is impossible that they could add the workload. We've seen all of our local election supervisors complain. Whether it's fully justified or not, they have complained that they're not being paid for the real number of hours. They're getting a part-time salary for what ended up being close to a full-time job for all the months of the election. There's a huge, huge, huge amount of work. So I don't think it's in the cards that any of this can be done by the internal staff. And I don't think it would be wise anyway because of the way the bylaws set it up. To be, external, so-called neutral, or hopefully neutral people. So we're past time on this. So
can I add one more comment? This is Anthony.
Okay, sure.
I'm not sure what Steve meant by in-house. Perhaps he just meant continuing with the existing process of hiring an NES and LES. In this spirit of what Bonnie said a moment ago, we can certainly do our RFPs and explain that the functions are more than mechanical in this election, that there's some juridical work to be done as well if the contractor feels competent and has the experience to do it. And finally, in light of what a couple of people were saying, naturally, this we can't make this decision ahead of time about contracting out, quote unquote, absent knowing what the price tag is going to be. So, of course, we can send out our RFP once we get it to our satisfaction. But if the low bid is $600,000 or something. Then it's kind of most of the other arguments become moot if we simply can't afford to to do this that way.
Steve Brown, I know we're over time, but I think I was mischaracterized. I did not mean staff should do this, and it still might not be doable. My idea was the largest pool of unused labor in Pacifica happens to be the 120 some odd members of the LSBs, and many of them are not staff. And I think that if possible, we could utilize them in some way. Although the fractiousness in the network may prevent that idea from ever getting off the ground. Nevertheless, I think we might look into it, at least as a fallback. If, as Anthony said, we get a bid we can't live with and it becomes very late in the process, then we have to have a plan B that we can afford.
And this is Leslie with one last comment on arbitration. We do have available an unused resource, the local election board. And if we can pump them up in some way to at least be a mediation group to some of these complaints,
I'm sorry, Leslie, what did you say? A local election board?
A local election committee.
You have that at KPFK?
We don't anymore. We did the first couple of elections.
Okay.
That we're supposed to, and it is in the bylaws. And they may be a source of not arbitration, but mediation for some of these. They may also be a resource that the LES can use to get some of this work done. I don't know.
Okay. Well, clearly we have to do more thinking and crafting about this. So, Yosh, what do you have the three dates that are under consideration for the next meeting of the working group?
Yes. In fact, I think they've been supplanted, but let me see. That would be Tuesday, October the 7th, Monday, October the 13th, which has been superseded by the committee itself, and Tuesday, October the 14th.
Okay, so who are the current members of the working group?
That would be Anthony, Bonnie, and myself, and then we do have outside experts Jack Van Aken, Art Stasny, and Michael Lauer.
Okay, and I'm joining the group as well. Does anyone else on the committee want to join who's not already in it?
Carolyn here. I would like to join if I could. I know I've had trouble scheduling, but I would like to try.
Okay, so Yosh, can you send out the two remaining dates to those people who said they're interested, and then try to, you know, make a decision in the next week or so as to the next date?
Yes. And, you know, I would suggest that maybe we should go with the earlier date, October the 7th, because the next meeting of this committee is 1 week later. And it seems to me that I think the working group should meet prior to the committee as a whole.
Well, that's a good point. Well, actually, since we're all on this call now, does anyone who's on the working group have a problem with Tuesday, October 7th?
This is Anthony. I don't have a problem, but I wonder if we shouldn't try to meet a little bit sooner since the previous meeting came to naught.
Well, all right. In that case, that's a little more time-consuming than we can do on this call. So if maybe you and Yosh could be in contact to come up with an earlier date and then circulate it to the members of the group, and
well,
I think it's fine if we can agree upon it.
Sure.
We had trouble the other night coming up with anything sooner.
Excuse me, I was a little alarmed at the statement that the next meeting of this committee is a week after October 7th. I don't see such a mention on my calendar, and it might have been an oversight, but
we just said it before you came on the call, Steve.
Okay, is that a meeting scheduled for October 14th then?
No, it's actually October 13th, but 6 days, not 7 days.
Okay, well, I don't have that down either, but good. Okay.
So, Anthony, can you work that out with Yosh?
Oh, certainly.
Yosh can send out a poll to those of us on this group, and we'll see if we can meet sooner. All right. Now, one last thing is I just wanted to get back to the original charge, which included looking at these nonprofit groups like the California Mediation and Conciliation Service, and I was wondering if this group could, or somebody else, if this group doesn't have time, could look into that and similar groups elsewhere, which might be willing to do some of these pieces for free.
Mm-hmm.
Is there anyone on the committee who could check into that? I thought somebody had earlier contacted them.
It's my fault on California Mediation and Conciliation. The fellow that is my contact went on an extended vacation, and I have not tried him for the past week or so, but I will.
Okay, great. Now, Rob, are you still with us?
Yeah, I can talk to the League of Women Voters, for example.
Okay. Now, who was the person in L.A.? Oh, maybe it was Jack Van Aken. I remember somebody said they had contacted the L.A. branch of the League, and they knew nothing about STV, and so they couldn't help KPFK with that election.
Yeah, I heard that, too, but I talked to the people in D.C., and these are not people that are, you know, I mean, these are elderly people that have been doing League stuff for decades, but they're very much aware of single of transferable vote. They don't necessarily have expertise in it, but increasingly they're learning how to do that, and they're working with other organizations. You know, for example, we worked with them in True Ballot, so they're gaining familiarity with it. So I think that the notion that organizations like this will not work with choice voting methods is exaggerated.
Well, that's good news. So, Rob, if you could, you know, contact them and then write a very short report to the committee, and then we can take that into account. Because maybe what we'll be able to end up with is only having to put out an RFP for pieces of it, or maybe in certain cities we'd want an outside company, but in other cities we might get one of these nonprofits to do it. Obviously, you'll have to add, both Bonnie and Rob should be asking whether they charge a fee for their services or and how much it is, or whether
they're going to charge us something. The question
right.
is what,
right? How
yeah.
much?
Yeah.
yeah. Okay, and then the final point was about unions that contract with companies to run elections. Is there anyone who has a way to research what those companies are, and maybe we could contact a couple of those?
Well, one of the companies that does work for SEIU and some others is True Ballot, which
okay.
is headquartered here in Silver Spring. They've worked with us to some extent, and they have I've spoken not directly on this matter to John Sabel, the president of the company.
Right. Well, they did the reballot. I mean, the counting of the BAI election.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So they understand Pacifica. They work with labor unions. They would be interested in forming a long-term relationship with us.
Okay. But are there other such companies?
I'm sure that there are. I, off the top of my head, I don't know who all of them are, but I can begin exploring that.
That would be really helpful, Rob, if
sure.
you could
okay.
do that. So then we can cast the widest possible net. Okay. If there's nothing else really urgent, since we are over time, can we go on to the next working group? Okay. That would be the cost. Cutting election costs. Just to remind everyone, the Finance Committee back in, when was it, in July, passed a motion asking the Election Committee to have emergency meetings to come up with ways to cut costs so that they could take it into account when they're reviewing the five stations' budgets. Now, obviously, that's too late for us to impact that particular process, but it doesn't, to me, remove the urgency that we you know, do this. Now, Steve tonight and on earlier calls has put out some ideas. Other people put out ideas. But I think it's necessary that we really focus it into one document that kind of lists all the ways we can come up with to cut costs. So we had agreed last meeting to create a working group to do that. Unfortunately, we weren't able to meet, but and the only two of us who volunteered were Bill and I. But Bill and I have agreed that either tomorrow night or Sunday we would be available to hold a meeting. So is there anyone on this call besides the two of us who would like to help us kind of pull together the different ideas that have been suggested already and maybe come up with more ideas for cutting costs?
Bob, Steve,
yes.
Before we do that, I recollect that at a prior meeting,
there was some agreement about the cost-cutting measures that I suggested, at least in surrounding the mailings and list cleanings, but the suggestion was made that this should be brought back to different members of the staff at the stations, and that was voted on. And people from each station agreed to query the relevant staff people. Has that been done? This is a barrier to stop us from moving forward until we get that, until we have that information. I forget who it was supposed to do it at the various stations. I know that I was not supposed to do it at BAI for embarrassing reasons, but somebody else had volunteered to do it for that station.
And thank you for reminding us. I think actually that was me at BAI, and I'm sorry I haven't been able to do that, but I'll prioritize that for this week. There were other people, I think, at each station.
Yes, Yosh said he would cover KPFK, and I did, in fact, finally get a hold of the person, our database, or our premiums person, Terry Guy, and he and I had a very fruitful discussion. Unfortunately, I don't have my notes with me, and I just have a vague recollection. But Terry did have a problem with sharing KPFK's list with Pacifica generically, because I guess our station has had a problem in the past with Pacifica taking our list and then sending out its own mailing or selling the KPFK list to some, you know, outside third party. And so that's something that has to be prevented. Otherwise, KPFK is willing to, you know, send out a mailing and clean up its lists as necessary.
Yeah, it would be for the network at whole, all at one time, would be cheaper that way and easy to manage, but we'd still have to get station-by-station approval.
Yeah, this is Bonnie. I think I was talking to Chris Stelick, and I actually started that conversation. But I realized that what I could use, if you could, Steve, because I think what you had sent out was kind of in the midst of a very long email where you had kind of changed your idea of how it needed to be done.
Correct.
If you could make it really shorter and more succinct, so that I found myself getting kind of lost while trying to talk to Chris about it. Simply put down for me, and I appreciate you rehashing this again,
right.
Very simply put down, and I think it would be good if you could send it to everybody,
what
the steps are so that I can distill it and get real answers from him. I suspect that KPFA will have the same problem that Yosh was just speaking about when it comes to merging into one Pacifica outlay, and I wonder if we could look at doing it on a by-station basis.
You can do it any, just as a matter of technical and practical consideration, you can do it either way, and no one has to do anything they're uncomfortable with. It's just that it's cheaper and easier to do it one shot, but that's not a deal breaker. So either way is feasible. I'll send out that material again. It's the part that deal with the steps is as succinct as I can make it. You just have to disregard all the other stuff that I stuck in there. I'll try to rework it.
Yeah, if you can just call out the part that really is germane to this, that would be really helpful.
Okay,
so then,
Bill.
Bill.
Yeah, and by the way, thank you for that, writing that up, Steve. And I did talk to the people at KPFT, our membership director, and also the development director, who used to be the membership director, and they seem to think they're keeping track, getting their mailings updated pretty well. I gave them a copy of Steve's email. And I suggested that actually they, rather than have a special mailing, the next time they do a solicitation mailing to all the members, everybody in their email list, that they follow Steve's recommendations so that they wouldn't even have to have any extra cost for the mailing. And to make sure we get back all the, whatever we can from the post office. They hadn't thought of that, so.
Yeah, that was, that was, if I can interrupt, that was the second step. The first step was simply having the list run through the COA, the national COA, which is 25, which is like $4 a thousand. It'll cost nothing.
Oh yeah,
to
right.
Do. And then,
right. And then
of course,
make more sense to do that nationally.
Right.
Now. Anyway, I'm still wondering it might be more likely to happen if there was a direction from the ED to all the GMs to make sure this happens.
What ED?
Well, whenever we do it, does it mean we're going to have somebody acting ED or whoever? I guess I don't know. Maybe that's wishful thinking. But
I think that point is well made. If we can't get support from management, none of these things are going to happen or make a difference.
Yeah, and also I was going to point out, and I apologize, I did send a real just a brief outline right as the meeting was starting of cost-saving things that, you know, I've been trying to collect, and we can elaborate on this more. A lot of it's already been done by Steve and other people. So, but if you have other suggestions, you know, email me and Bob, and we'll add them to the list.
Okay, so the one other station is PFW, and Rob, unfortunately right now you're the only person on the call from there. Would you be able to speak to either the GM or someone?
Yeah, I will write to the, in terms of the staffing of this committee?
Well, no, in terms of...
The list
Steve is going to distill down his suggestions for how to clean up the mailing list at all five stations, and we just wanted to check in with the people on the ground before we just kind of mandate something that they may or may not consider practical to actually adopt. So is that a conversation you could have with someone at PFW in the next 3 weeks?
In other words, can I ask them what are they doing to clean their lists up and so forth?
Well, you could forward Steve's email and then ask them how do they assess the practicality of taking some of those steps.
Okay, I think I'm going to have to ask him direct questions, so I'll work with Steve on that. But I think the answer is going to be that absent a directive from both the PNB through the ED, that we're going to continue doing what we've always been doing, and our lists are going to be in disarray.
Well, I think that's the next step of this process would be that the committee would recommend a policy to the board, and then that would come through the ED to the management.
But we just want to get
input first. That's
I'd be
all.
Happy to look at Steve's email and find out what specific questions we need to ask staff. Mm-hmm. In terms of what they can do, unfortunately, it's my experience that it's very difficult to get the local stations to do anything to change, even if it's in their best interest. So I think we're going to have to be institutional in that approach.
I understand. Okay. And by the way, Rob, before you came on, I was wondering, has your LSB elected two reps to this committee?
I don't believe that they have, and I will write to our chair again and copy you and ask them to please complete that process. But I don't believe that that's happened yet.
Okay, thanks. Yeah, if you could ask that be done urgently, that would really
help. Sure, that's the least I could do, and I apologize for being delinquent.
That's okay. All right. So now
hi, this is Carol and Bob. I'm sorry to interrupt, but did I miss the report time, or have you just rearranged?
No, we haven't gotten to it yet.
Okay.
Yeah. All right. So so back to this working group. So we'd like to meet, Bill and I and whoever would like to join us, we'd like to meet either tomorrow night or Sunday night. So is there anyone on the call who would like to join the group? This is not going to be a long-term working group. We just want to maybe have a couple meetings to pull together all the lists of all the best ideas that have come out of the committee in one document.
Hmm. Yeah, Bob, this is Leslie. I can do it if it's Sunday. Tomorrow night is an LSB meeting here.
Okay. All right, Bill, that's still good for you, right?
Yes.
So maybe, I don't know, maybe 6 p.m. Eastern?
Sure.
Leslie,
That's fine with me.
Okay. Anyone else want to join? Okay. So that'll be the meeting that, you know, if people change their mind later, we'll, you know, people are open to join us this coming Sunday, 6 p.m. Eastern.
Could you put it on the list just in case people have time and want to
sure.
join? Thank you. That would help.
Okay.